Welcome back to another episode of Leap Into Wellness. My name is Anya Schuler. I'm here today with Kyle Pfaffenbach. And today, we are going to be discussing...
Wait, don't I get a chance to say, like, great to be here? I'm glad to be back. How was your spring break? Did you have a break?
If you are going to ask that, why don't you, like, ask it like I didn't even jump into the topic? That'll make the editing a lot easier.
No, I think it's cool to get the banter. Like, I think this should all be in.
No. No, no, no.
I think this should all be it.
Okay. My spring break was fun. I went to the coast.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I swam in the ocean.
I didn't know that. Were you doing like cold tolerance? Were you thinking about the physiology of swimming in?
It crossed my mind. I just did it because I love the ocean.
Oh, got it. Were you with friends or with your family?
I was with my family. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, the coast is awesome.
What about you? What did you do over spring break?
I went to visit my mother in Georgia with my sister and her kid and my kids. And so it was good cousins time.
Nice.
Yeah, it was great.
Do you have any other banter that you want to get through before we get to the topic?
Well, you just got to ease people into it, you know?
Yeah, like, no. Starting these is hard.
Yeah. Let's get into it. So you have the topic. This is Anya's baby. This is a topic that she brought. I actually, relative to the other things we've talked about on this podcast so far, I'm still pretty new.
Yeah, it's not a new topic, but we're still currently learning a lot about it.
So I'll say, the topic, why don't you introduce the topic and then I'll tell you a little bit about give some perspective on it.
Today we're going to be talking about chrononutrition, and it's a big word, but the word itself actually gives us a clue to what it means. Chrono is the Greek word for time, and nutrition, everyone knows what nutrition means. Basically, chrononutrition looks at the interaction between food, metabolism, your meal timing, and then how that interacts with your circadian rhythms or your body clocks.
Yeah, and so I think it's cool that we've already introduced circadian rhythm, and if you need to brush up on that, go back and give us some more listens. So just briefly, as a super fast refresher, circadian rhythm is just basically the 24-hour like clock that our body runs on, and this is our cells, to a degree that I don't think we always appreciate, run on a circadian rhythm. And so do like many, many other organisms. This is not a particularly human trait. But for humans, we now have artificial light, which is in the span of human existence and even modern human existence is a relatively new thing. So we have sort of these natural experiments that are occurring where we're beginning to ask questions and have understanding around our circadian rhythm because we're manipulating it in all these ways that are quote unquote unnatural. And when I say unnatural, I don't mean that we can't handle it. I just mean that it's outside of what we originally evolved for.
Yeah, from an evolutionary perspective. The reason I wanted to talk about chrononutrition today is that it fits in really, really well with our discussion about intermittent fasting that we had in our last episode. We covered a lot of information and we didn't really have time to get into the chrononutrition element of meal timing.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned before, like, this is a little bit of not a new topic, but it is kind of a new topic. And what's interesting is this, like, the longer you're around science and in this world of just sort of like trying to understand these different things, what you see is that there's like these periods of time where things become popular or we find more people asking about them or more people talking about them. And a lot of times it's a result of like you just said, this is a natural discussion to have in its relationship with like things like intermittent fasting or time restricted feeding or the different things that we talked about before. And so then these questions sort of arise. And the first thing you want to do when you're asking a new question is go back and find out what's already been done in regards to this. Like, you're definitely it's very rare that you're the first person to ever think about a certain topic or a certain subject or something like that. So Anya always does these really great write-ups before a podcast to help her organize her thoughts, which I think is amazing. And I was just looking over her notes and, you know, this idea of chrononutrition is like this term that was coined, I think she said, back in 1986. And I actually I find this a lot. When I was studying in 2009, 2010, calorie restriction and intermittent fasting, I went back and found a lot of papers from like, and it would be one person that was interested in a particular topic for 5 to 7 years. And it was just that nobody else was interested. And so there'll be like a small series of papers. There'll be this kind of one or two people that are studying this particular thing. And just for whatever reason, it doesn't quote unquote catch on. It doesn't mean it's important. It doesn't mean it's. And so when she says like, it's not new, what she's saying is like the first people that were asking these questions and the first time that it shows up in the scientific literature could be 30, 40 years ago. It doesn't mean that it was well vetted at that point. And we use these research tools to research topics like PubMed is one of my favorite places to look. And they basically have a thing going from 1950 to 2024. And there's bar graphs for the number of papers that have come out in every one of those years. And I always look at that, like if I were to go to PubMed, type in chrononutrition, you'll see like this one, like in 1987, there's a weird spike in papers and then they just go away. And then all of a sudden the topic comes back and more papers are published on it.
Right. I haven't looked at those metrics for chrononutrition. Now I want to.
Yeah. It's super cool. Just any topic, it's really interesting to see how, especially in terms of scientific literature, because the idea is that this is a pretty standardized way to share and disseminate information. And so the number of papers published on a particular topic, you can really tell when the hot times and then when that sort of people stopped asking those questions and they stopped exploring it. And it wasn't as interesting and things like that. You can do the same thing for obviously the most egregious of this would be, or the most outrageous of these would be something like COVID-19, right? There's going to be nothing about it. And then so many things, right? Those events occur and people start going back and they start going, well, who has looked at, you know, altered physiology because of wearing masks all the time or all these different types of things. I think this is super interesting. And I think, you know, we have gained so much information in the last decade about circadian rhythm and about meal timing and the role of hormones and the circadian rhythm of hormones.
It ties into so many things.
It just ties in. And so of course it's going to like come back up. So it's a very natural thing, I think, to be talking about.
If you listened to our last episode, you might remember that Kyle and I had a bit of a disagreement about the practicality of time-restricted eating. I wanted to talk about some practical elements of chrononutrition that address the fact that when we eat have very strong physiological impacts, but not being so rigid saying you have to eat only in this time period and you can't eat anytime else, because that is not a very
sustainable
strategy.
And the reality is like it's going to be different for everybody in different places. It's going to be different for people in different latitudes and longitudes. It's going to be different culturally. It's going to be different. And there are going to, just like everything else that we've talked about, there's going to be responders and non-responders. There's morning people, there's night owls, there's cultural influences of that, there's work restrictions.
Yeah. Because of all of that variability, we wanted to kind of zero in on one element of chrononutrition, which is how to eat in a way to optimize sleep.
But before we get to that point, I just want to make sure, I know we gave like a good introduction, but it was pretty, it was the way scientists would introduce a topic. So let's try and like boil this down into things. So what are experiences, what are some experiences that we know of that people face maybe on a regular basis, maybe on a semi-regular basis, that can point to the fact where they go, oh yeah, that did affect the way I felt. So like, can you think of any examples of that?
Like of chrono disruption?
Yes.
There are so many examples of it.
What's a classic example of chrono disruption?
Oh, are you talking about jet lag?
Yeah, jet lag, of course. See?
I was stuck on on eating. Yeah.
No, so people know that, like, if you've had the opportunity to even travel to the East Coast or to travel even two or three time zones, it not only disrupts, like, oh, my body thinks it's this or that, but you also, if you're really being aware of your body and your feelings, you'll notice you get hungry at different times and those types of things. And so one of the things that studies have demonstrated is what's, like, the absolute best way to minimize jet lag.
Changing when you eat to match your...
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, like, one of the most efficacious things that has been demonstrated is you eat at breakfast, lunch, and dinner times of your destination, and can start to shift that clock if you're introducing nutrients during the normal, quote unquote, normal meal times, breakfast, lunch, and dinner of your destination.
Yeah. Do you think we should talk a little bit about why meal timing has such a strong impact on circadian rhythm?
Yeah. So how we can, nutrients are signals. This is something that we've talked about a lot throughout this podcast series, is that nutrients are signals. They're more than just fuel. And so when you ingest nutrients, it tells you something, it tells your body something about, like, what's going on and what the situation is. And we create rhythms around that. That's why when you're intermittent fasting, for example, the hardest times to make it through are during your normal meal times. For most other, because that's when your body's quote unquote used to, that's when the rhythm, the hunger signals, all those different types of things kick in, because they know food is typically available at this time. I need to get motivated to go seek that food out. And it also, it underlines the fact that when you eat matters, when you go to bed matters, all these different things in terms of establishing your daily routine, they really do matter. And the more variable that is, we have more and more studies and more data suggesting that there are potential health consequences to having high levels of variability in those different types of things.
And this is like every other aspect of nutrition and wellness that we've talked about. It's not all or nothing. You do want to be as regular as possible, but occasionally everyone has events in their life that throw you off on a weird schedule. That's not going to ruin everything. It's better to shoot for regularity as much as you can and not be completely crushed when you can't.
And I think, you know, I totally agree. And I think being cognizant of irregularity is the best way to do that. So if you're simply aware of when your schedule's off and the potential consequences of how that makes you feel and those types of things. Again, we're not trying to control every aspect of people's very dynamic lives. What we are doing, though, is just trying to create some awareness around some of these topics. So you have an explanation of, like, maybe I was supposed to do a 10-mile tempo run, but, you know, things didn't work out for whatever reason. And I know it's worse for me to push through that than to maybe back off a little bit.
Yeah. And just the relationship between sleeping, eating, hormonal rhythms, it's so interesting, because having a disruption or a change in any of those impacts the others. And so when you do have an element of chrono disruption, like, for example, you maybe had a poor night's sleep, that influences hormonal release. It influences your insulin sensitivity, your leptin levels, when you're releasing cortisol, when cortisol drops, and that influences your hunger.
Yes.
And it influences when you want to eat. And then that in turn can influence when you fall asleep.
It influences the type of foods that you crave.
Exactly.
And the type of foods that you want.
And then eating, like having changes in your appetite and cravings will in turn influence when you're releasing cortisol, when insulin is spiking, which influences your sleep. So it just goes 100%. In this cycle, which is super interesting.
And this is one of the things that really makes, like, so, you know, the majority of the audience of this podcast is hopefully the teachers, and you will notice this at different times of the year based on the light and dark cycle, but also, like, the things that are going on at work. Like, I would, you know, bet all my money that your sleep schedule and your eating schedule are quite different in the summertime than they are during the work year. And then, you know, especially when we're talking to people that also stay afterwards, to do different, maybe they have a sports practice or they're a coach or you have kids of your own that you're shuttling around and you're doing all these different types of things. And you really, this is where it can be really beneficial to sort of have awareness around this so that you can, you know, kind of have a plan, at least the outline of a plan. You know, you have to be adaptable and meet the circumstances that arise, but it does give you kind of a fighting chance to create some regularity. We don't want irregularity to be the norm. And so people kind of need to like really be realistic with, we'd all like to get 9 hours of sleep a night and have it be fall asleep as soon as our head hits the pillow and wake up at the same time of the day and, you know, take a cold plunge and get 30 minutes of, sunshine without sunglasses on and get and like have all our meals prepped. But like things just don't work like that in modern society. But that doesn't mean we can't create awareness around these issues. And as you've brought up several times, there are some actionable things that you can do around this idea of chrononutrition that can make a huge difference in a person's overall health because of the way that it either impacts or doesn't negatively impact things like sleep.
Yeah. The best thing that you can do is you don't want to eat more than 2 or 3 hours before you go to sleep. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, 2 to 3 hours, I think, is the ballpark that you want. The other thing that goes along with that is have your dessert with your dinner. Like, this is actually really important because you dessert an hour after you've had dinner is basically like another meal, and that's usually a little too close to bedtime. I will say there are some like very rare exceptions to this sort of thing. So there is some evidence in very hard training individuals. So if you have, you know, sons or daughters that are high school athletes or they're training really hard and things like that, there are some papers that in like younger developing people that getting a little bit of protein prior to going to bed is actually beneficial for recovery and doesn't disrupt sleep. Carbohydrates in that scenario or sugar in that scenario or hot chocolate before you go to bed, those types of things. Even, I've talked to several parents that say, oh yeah, you know, my kid eats a huge bowl of fruit before he goes to bed, but fruit's healthy for you. And yeah, fruit is healthy for you, but it also has a ton of sugar in it. And so you don't want to be spiking blood sugar just as you're like trying to wind down and go to sleep.
I think that we mentioned this. I'm trying to remember what episode we talked about cortisol, but one of the biggest reasons why you want to avoid eating 2 or 3 hours before bed is one of those circadian rhythms that influences sleep so much is cortisol. Cortisol has a natural fluctuation, and cortisol will be at its lowest early in your sleep cycle when you're trying to wind down and go to sleep. And then cortisol will rise again in the morning when your body is waking itself up, primed for the day. And so eating close to when you go to sleep is going to throw off that cortisol curve. You're probably going to raise your cortisol when it should be lowering for sleep. So that's only one of the many reasons.
Many reasons. I mean, there's so many I remember the first time I heard a talk about this where someone was basically saying that the way we process food is also different at night than it is during the day when we normally utilize it. So I have two quick anecdotes regarding this. One is I remember the first time a good friend of mine who's also a colleague was in naturopathic medical school. And he was telling me about this seminar that he heard from a woman, and I really wish I remember her name, but she had done a lot of amazing studies on high fat feeding before people went to bed. And fat already takes a pretty long time to get absorbed into the system and get like distributed and those types of things. And what she had demonstrated was like, if you eat close to when you go to bed, you have these extended periods of high blood lipids and high, basically circulating levels of fat in your bloodstream way beyond the normal when you eat closer to bed. And they thought that was one of the mechanisms that contribute to things like obesity and cardiovascular disease and atherosclerosis and high blood pressure. So, because what we see is in people that don't get enough sleep and that are on irregular eating and sleeping cycles, there's a lot of increased risk and there's much higher incidences and rates of chronic disease. So this is one of the big issues with things like air traffic controllers and night nurses and night doctors and firefighters. And I mean, the biggest cause of mortality in structure firefighters is cardiovascular disease. And these are people that are supposed to be like, you know, really healthy and fit and able to fight fires and be ready to go at beck and call and those types of things. But the way the schedule is like very, very stressful. And a lot of that is based on the disruptions to their circadian rhythm.
Yeah, it's a super interesting topic. The differences in your body's ability to metabolize and process different macronutrients when it's primed to at the optimal time of the circadian rhythm versus at night. There are circadian elements to when your pancreas secretes enzymes for digesting fat, which is something that relates to what Kyle was talking about. All of the enzymes secreted by your gut are going to have fluctuations according to circadian rhythm. It's super fascinating.
This is the kind of discussion that if we had like opened this series with this discussion, it would have just been like, check, please. I never want to listen to two talk about it again. But as you build these like basics and you build this understanding, then you can start to peel back some more layers of complexity and things like that. And so the other kind of quick anecdote I'll say, it will be quick, is that there are ways that you can just get a commercially available continuous glucose monitor. So this is basically just a patch with a little Bluetooth sensor in it that is sort of taking sips of interstitial fluid and measuring it for blood sugar every 5 minutes, 24 hours on the clock. And this has become an invaluable tool to people with like type 1 and type 2 diabetes that are really trying to learn how these rhythms are in place and how much insulin they need at different amounts of time and what different habits like exercise and sleep and lack of sleep and those types of things, how it impacts their insulin sensitivity. And I was working with someone that was experimenting with one of these, and we had several conversations over a number of years about not eating high carbohydrate snacks before bed. The go-to snack in question were large bowls of cereal.
Oh dear.
And when you look at it, it was really interesting when this individual would eat a similar bolus of cereal in the middle of the day or at a normal feeding time, there was just a really nice up and down glucose curve. When they would eat a big bowl of cereal at 11 o'clock prior to going to bed, a lot of times their blood sugar wouldn't come back down to like semi-normal level until 5 or 6 in the morning.
That's crazy.
These things are, they're right now used mostly in medical and research settings, but they're, those types of devices are going to end up becoming as like normal as Fitbits and wearable technology.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So those things, I think the two big things that you could take away from this is one of the easiest things to do is to become aware of when you're eating prior to bedtime, because that's something that's sort of set in generally, you know, day in, day out. There's always going to be times where your flight was delayed and you're stuck without food and you end up getting to a hotel room at 1 a.m. and eating. I'm speaking from very recent travel experiences. And you're just going to go like, all right, well, I'm just going to have to deal with this. But for the most part, if you generally know what time you start winding down and listening to your body, you don't want to be getting hungry at that time. You want to make sure that you're getting the food and the nutrients and the protein that you need at dinner to sustain you for the next 12 to 14 hours. And then you kind of want to go from there.
Yeah, I think that is a sustainable strategy that most people can implement. I'm glad we're able to talk about this. This is all of the topics we choose are complex.
Totally.
But I'm having a really good time trying to figure out good ways to present these. Hopefully we're getting better at it as we go.
Yeah. And when you guys have questions and if you have follow-up questions on this, or, I mean, we do a lot of these based off the feedback that we've gotten from you all. And because I think something that's important to reiterate, which we've talked about before, and I don't think I can say it too many times, although I could test that hypothesis, but anyways, is that, like, you're going to see things like on social media or on Facebook, or you're going to hear people talking and they're going to say, this is the way you have to do this or that. You don't eat this at this time. Don't do this at this time. And I think it's just a much more usable approach the way we're doing it here, where our goal is not going to be to tell you what to do. Our goal is going to be talk about these things that are really interesting, that there are particular action items that you can raise awareness around and try. And we want to be providers of information so that you feel empowered to make the decisions that you make that are right for you and where you're at.
Right. I do have some exciting news. We have some other faculty from the Health and Human Performance Department lined up to be guests on the podcast in the next couple months.
Everybody is jumping with joy, saying, let's get some other people on here, not just this Pfaffenbach guy.
No, but I'm excited because we're going to be able to branch out a little bit. We're going to be talking about some physical therapy topics that I think are going to be really applicable to a lot of people.
100%.
We're going to be talking about stress and going into more aspects of stress. So I'm very excited for that. So
yeah, I mean,
tuned.
We just have like the you know, universities always have really talented and diverse and interesting people that have worked really hard to kind of acquire the knowledge bases that they have, and actually having a platform to reach this community and be a positive, like hopefully have a positive impact on the LeGrand community is like a really cool opportunity. So I think it's great.
And keep sending us questions.
Yep, for sure.
It can be outside the realm of nutrition. I know that most of what we've talked about has been very nutrition and metabolics related, but
we all have to eat.
Exactly.
Yep. All right. Sounds good. Thanks a lot. And great job choosing this topic and putting together all the notes for it. I just have to show up and riff, and it makes it easy for me. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. See you next time.
We'll see you next time.